I'll go home and pack my panties. You go home and get your scanties, and away we'll go.
Ooh.
Off we're gonna shuffle, and shuffle off to Buffalo.
Niagara in a sleeper, there's no honeymoon that's cheaper, and the train goes slow.
Ooh.
Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo.
That's right, everybody. It is Shuffle Off to Buffalo in honor of my special guest, David Grosskopf. Everybody, my name is Alan Gygax. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. So most of you already know this, but David Grosskopf is the president of Branch 3 in Buffalo. And I brought him on today because I want to talk about leadership. Leadership in general, what it means to be a leader of people, what it means to be a president of your branch. So, David, welcome to Classes of Male.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, so you were one of my first guests ever, maybe my first guest ever, and I know it was your first time on a podcast, and we've come a long way since then. It's just a microphone set up on a table, and now there's a whole setup, but you, man, you're everywhere. When people do national Zooms, or you're all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I try to be out there. I try to be involved. You know, I try, obviously, not only to lead my own branch, but, you know, just help this entire reform movement because, you know, these younger folks, they're important. They're important to me. Their future is important to me. And, you know, thank goodness I only, you know, technically have about 5 years here left to go and I can retire. But I made a commitment, you know, to my carriers and my branch and obviously to letter carriers nationwide. Running in 2026, I'm going to do everything I can until I retire to make the NALC a better place.
That's fantastic. And your efforts are definitely appreciated. And you mentioned something right in the beginning that I want to touch on, which is caring about younger carriers. There seem to be two attitudes among older carriers. You've probably been picking up on this too, that they're starting to call us old heads. And so there's two attitudes among old heads. One is that I suffered when I came up, and so you should have to suffer also, but that is not your attitude. How do you feel about that?
No, matter of fact, I talk about this. I do the Carrier Academy. It's where we sign up and we do our organizing. And I talk about this in the Carrier Academy when I'm signing up new carriers. I talk about, you know, you come from two schools of thought, the old, and most people have heard of this, you know, your parents walked uphill both ways in a snowstorm,
right,
you know, to get to school, therefore you have to do that too. That's not my mindset. You know, my mindset is if I can fight through some of this stuff and folks do not have to go through some of the struggles, trials, and tribulations that I've been through in my life, and I can make that a little bit easier on them, I'm going to do that. But with that being said, I also tell the younger folks, you know, we can't give everything to you. You have to earn it also. So it's a combination of the two things for me here. I'm going to try to, you know, take all that negativity away or all that harshness away. But we still got to work, you know, and pull ourselves up.
Absolutely. So let's let my listeners get to know you a little bit. How did you work your way up through your branch to become president?
Yeah, probably like, you know, a lot of folks do. I would assume, you know, I got hired by the post office. And early on, we had a merger. We were our own local branch. Buffalo is its own separate branch. The older guys were retiring. Nobody kind of wanted to take over at the time. Man, if hindsight, it was 2020 for me. But it wasn't. I was one of those younger carriers going, all right, listen, we've got no leadership. It's a good idea that we merge. So we merged. And when we merged, the two longtime stewards in my station, they were totally against it. They were older guys. They didn't agree with it. And they walked away from the stewardship. So when I was coming into work every day, I'm looking around and I'm like, there's like nobody here to protect us.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't know Article 1 from Article 41, but I came from a unionized family. My father was a steel worker. My mother was a teacher's aide. And the very first thing my father told me to do when I could was join the union, which I did. He never told me to get involved in the union, but right. I certainly saw a need having that entire workroom floor unprotected, what management was doing. At the time, I also worked with a lot of veterans. I'm not a veteran myself, but I bet you 70% of the men and women in my office were veterans, and I saw the way that management was taking advantage of them. My father was a veteran, and that put a bad taste in my mouth. And there were some other things that happened. When my first daughter was born, she had febrile seizures, and I spent months sleeping on the floor at Buffalo Children's Hospital when she was in there. And my postmaster was really cool. She knew what was going on, and you know, she knew I wasn't, you know, playing hooky, and she would allow me that leeway. Well, then a new OIC came in, and when that OIC came in, guess what they said? Hey, where's this Grosskopf character, right? And when I explained to them what I was doing and had been doing, they didn't care. And at that point, I'm a young father with a newborn. I got a floor that's unprotected. I've got the employer taking advantage of my veterans. And I went, you know what? I got to step up. So, right. You know, I opened up a JCAM and I started to read. I'm completely self-taught. You know, I had some people to help me along the way here. But that's how I got into it is, you know, I said, listen, this isn't a good idea for us to be unprotected on the workroom floor. We need somebody to stand up and we need somebody to take care of business for us. And that's what I did.
All right. So that's how you got into the union as on the advocacy side in general. So you're telling me yes. that back then you didn't have somebody to just read the JCAM to you that you could listen to while you're out walking the route?
No.
What a shame. Man, what a world we live in today that people have that luxury.
Again, at the Carrier Academy, I tell this story how I learned. Like, I like to have a book in front of me or a paper in front of me.
Right.
But when I'm in the academy, I tell the younger folks about the NELC app and all the technology, you know, the podcasts, whether it's you and Corey and everybody else. I'm like, listen to these folks. They're doing you a service. Throw that phone in your pocket. Put them on and listen to them talk while you're delivering that mail.
That's it. Okay, so eventually, we talked about this on your first appearance on this podcast, how you made your way to become branch president. So now that you are branch president, what is your role in branch three? Like, what do you do as a president? And more importantly, like, who are you to your carriers?
Right. So, like, you like to talk a lot, and you show on your podcast, you know, the positions, all right, in your local branch are normally spelled out in the Constitution, you know, for the federal and supporting branches and or your bylaws. So my duty as the president of Branch 3, you know, enumerates from Article 6 under the presidency, and then our bylaws define it a little bit more. But again, you know, my job day to day for Branch 3 is everything from the garbage man to the CEO and everything in between. That's what, you know, as a branch president, I'm doing. I have my hands in everything. Steering that ship, basically, right? That's our job as leaders, is steering that ship, making sure, you know, all those parts are moving and working correctly and working together, you know, for the common good. The question of what do I mean to my carriers? That's a tough question, right?
That's fair. That's fair. We can come back to that, or we can skip that one, because I got another question since you brought up the bylaws.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to get into the issues that we're having here in my branch, but in your branch, you have, just like every other president, the general supervisory authority over your officers. So what do you do to make sure that, A, they're responsive to your branch's members, and B, that they're accountable to your branch's members?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, again, what I always joke with everybody, I spend a lot of my time double, triple, and quadruple checking things. You know, everything from I have a very talented executive vice president. He and he alone basically can handle my grievance procedure. But as things are coming in, we're talking together. When we're getting calls, you know, from those carriers, we're discussing those amongst ourselves. You know, same thing with my secretary treasurer. She's, you know, when she's here 3 or 4 days a week, she's up in my office 4 or 5 times a day. You know, because we're going over these things, looking at it, the trustees are stopping in, my formal aides are stopping in, you know, to put stuff together. There's a ton of communication in the, you know, the union hall is like, it's like a hive. It's buzzing over here. So there's a lot of people in here and there's a lot of folks working together, you know, accountability. This is a tough thing, in my opinion, in general, in the NELC. We have jobs, like you said, as presidents, we have general oversight and supervisory authority. And when our folks aren't doing the right things, we have to step in and we have to, again, try to correct, you know, that situation. And sometimes if you've got an uncooperative member or board member or, you know, grievant or something like that, sometimes, you know, you basically have to be a little bit like management. You have to put your foot down and you have to let them know what those rules are, why we do what we do, you know, and educate them.
Right. Yeah. And there's always the recourse that you hope it never comes to, that people can be relieved of responsibilities or even Article 10 charges can be brought up if they need to be removed from their position. But
correct. Or even myself as president, for example, we're not dictators. We're not the ultimate authority. You know, the body is the ultimate authority. If somebody has a question, you know, about anything I'm doing or questions anything I'm doing, you know, there's Article 11 of that Constitution. And as a president, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of Article 10 or Article 11. If we're doing the right things and leading the branch in the right way, there should be no issue. And I tell people this, I tell letter carriers this all the time. The only reason that you're afraid is because you're not educated.
Absolutely.
You know, get yourself educated, get yourself up to speed on, you know, the subject matter that you're speaking about. And I guarantee you, a lot of that fear goes away.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. And that's a big part of what I'm trying to do now with Classes in Mail is it started out just education to make yourself discipline proof that, hey, management can't get you in trouble if you know the proper way to do your job and actually do your job that way. But now the mission is broader with empowerment and letting people know their rights in the workplace and what they should expect out of the people who are there to serve them. You know, even management, they're in a leadership capacity. They should feel about leadership very much the same way you do, that they're there to serve the people that they're leading, to make sure they're going in the right direction. And it is rare in management in particular to have leaders like that. Okay. So let's go on to, you mentioned Article 11, like where if somebody takes issue with something a branch officer does, they can bring it to you and you can make a ruling on that. And if someone has issue with you, they can take it to the branch itself at the general membership meeting. But when that comes up, I'm sure that you try to talk to that person first and work things out. So what do you do when you have that disgruntled member or even worse, someone who wants to leave the union altogether?
Sure. I mean, again, communication is the key, right? Is to sit down with that person somehow or the, you know, the best communication method possible. Maybe they don't want to sit in a room with you. Maybe they want to talk over the phone or whatever the deal is, or they want to communicate via text or email. Have that conversation with them. That's your duty as the leader, even if they're unhappy with you, is to have that conversation and listen. Listen to what they're saying. And then again, respond to that. Respond to that in a professional manner, in a factual manner. You know, and again, some folks you're not going to be able to obviously turn around or get them to see, you know, the light of day per se, right? It's the old, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, you know, type deal argument. But that I don't consider, if that happens ultimately in the end and you've gone through all these other steps trying to have a conversation with them and maybe they don't like you, maybe you have one of your other officers have a conversation with them, you know, do these things. And then at the end of the day, if they still don't agree with you or they still don't like you, as a leader, I don't necessarily consider that a failure because I've attempted to do everything I can do, you know, to talk it through with that person before there's an issue, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And with people wanting to leave the union, you know, often it's bigger than just a branch issue or some, I take it back. Sometimes it's strictly a branch issue. Maybe it's like their own steward that they have issue with and they're like, oh, they didn't defend me right. I'm going to get out of the union. Or it could be at the branch level or it's at the national level and they're upset because, you know, the national president didn't do what they thought they should do. Very rarely does a person have a problem with the entire union. Right. But even if they do, like let's say they have a problem at the branch level, you can't get out of the union because then you completely lose your voice. And so now, like that whole procedure of like, oh, you go to the branch meeting and people can vote on it. You don't have that anymore. You don't have that vote. And so it's important to me, even if you're dissatisfied, in some cases, especially if you're dissatisfied, to stay in the union and try to affect positive change.
The number one reason to stay in the union.
Yeah.
If you're unhappy about what's going on, don't get out. They win.
Yep, exactly.
Right? And that's where we're at here, you know, currently, you know, coming up in 2026. Yeah,
right, right.
There are folks like myself that are unhappy with the way the union is running. Mm-hmm. We're not bailing. We're not sitting back and saying, you know what, we're taking our ball and going home. We're not doing that. We're putting ourselves out there. We're putting our ideas out there, our platforms out there, and we're saying, look, this is, if you put us in here, this is what we're going to attempt to do to try to fix this thing.
That's exactly right. And so this is only going out on audio, so listeners, you can't see this, but David's virtual backdrop on Zoom is the CLC, the logo. Shield. Yeah, exactly. The shield. There you go. Right. And it says right behind him, 2026. And if you want to vote for that change in 2026 and bring in new leadership to let the Lions come in, you have to be a member of the NALC in order to cast that vote. And, you know, this tentative agreement is such a great example of that, because so many people were upset when the tentative agreement came out. And at my own station, people said, oh, screw this. If that's all they're going to do for us, I'm getting out of the union. I said, no, man, you got to be in the union so you can vote no on the tentative agreement. And it worked. Our voice was heard. And you see now this at least superficial change in the way Brian Renfro is handling negotiations, handling communication, when suddenly we have this mandate from the carriers of, you know, 70% of people weren't satisfied. They let them know. And if those people just dropped out of the union, we keep with the status quo.
Right. And then we go into, you know, you've got those two schools, in my opinion. You've got, you know, the establishment, and then you've got the non-establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I tell people here, I'll give you another example as far as leadership and how I operate. Obviously, I'm the co-chair or the second in command of the Concerned Letter Carriers. I'm a candidate for trustee in 2026. I got a call a few months ago from Mike Karaff.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike wants to come to my meeting to speak. He's running for president. And it's my opinion as the president of my branch that I need to expose my members to anybody that's running for that position. Even though I'm on the CLC, even though I support James Henry, even though I believe James Henry is the best candidate for president, my doors are open in Buffalo. Mike's coming in into my May meeting. If Brian Renfro wants to come in, I'd be more than happy to bring, you know, Brian Renfro in. And obviously we're going to have James Henry there, because that's what I owe my membership. I owe my membership the right to, you know, determine which one of those men at this current time, you know, could be their next president.
Right.
It shouldn't be, you know, this thing where, you know what, I'm on the CLC and I'm not going to bring Mike in to try to harm that exposure. It's not how I look at things. I believe the NALC is the most uncompetitive environment I've ever been in. I was an athlete my whole life, in high school, in college. I was a very good athlete. I'm a very competitive guy. And how I look at this is, you know, whoever is the best individual for that position, they're going to win.
Right.
You know, true. So as a candidate, you shouldn't be afraid, you know, of the other people. You know, Mike Kraft's not the enemy here, okay?
Right.
Mike's on the reform movement side. We need Mike.
Yeah, all right? Absolutely.
You know, we need that guy because he thinks just like we do. And, you know, that's the mentality that this union has to get in, is get out of this good old boy club, this, you know, frat house mentality, and get into an environment where it is competitive to put the best possible people in these positions. That's what should be happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So with the saga that's been going on in my branch, I've started hearing from people all around the country that are having the exact same issue. That,
yes.
You know, and it's not just that. So there's two problems here. One is the anointing of whoever's going to be the next president or whoever comes next. And obviously that's what happened with Brian Renfro as well. That's how he got in. And so that system needs to change to exactly what you say, where the best qualified person comes in and takes over and does the job next. But then in addition to that, you also touched a little bit on gatekeeping, where the folks who are in power do everything they can to keep, not just keep themselves elevated, but actively keep other people down. And that drives me nuts because you're limiting the power of your union. And we should want the best possible people to get the best possible training so that we can be the strongest union we can be.
You just did your podcast. I can't remember what you called it.
The democratization of information. Yes.
There you go. That key. Mm-hmm. Total. Who's ever listening now, listen to that podcast, because that's what we're facing as the CLC, for example. We don't get to get flown all over the country to go to branch meetings and, attend RAF sessions and all mm-hmm. these other things. You know, we're all doing this, on our own dime. The incumbents have a massive advantage that they get to do this all the time. It doesn't cost them a dime. Now, they're going to say they're not politic, and we all know what goes on.
Of course.
All right, I went off the turnip truck yesterday, right?
Right.
But that's an advantage that they have. And I'm not sitting here crying about it. What I'm telling you is, if you want, for example, the concerned letter carriers or Mike Graff or anybody else to get out there, you're going to have to donate money to us. We'll come out there. We'll put our side of the issues out there to allow you to hear us. But that's what needs to happen. But unfortunately, just like, national level, politics, it's not cheap. It's a very expensive thing to do. And a lot of us are digging deep in our own personal pockets, to exact change in this union. And again, there's no guarantee that, that money's ever coming back to you. All you can do is, in like our instance, is hope that we can win, hope we can exact that change, and hope we can instill, hope, trust, and integrity and transparency once again in the NALC.
That's excellent. So you bring it up. It's worth mentioning. I've donated a couple of times to the concerned letter carriers. If people wanted to donate to help the cause, I know obviously a lot of my listeners are on board with the CLC's mission. How would people go about doing that?
You can go to our website, which is Concerned Letter Carriers. And on there's going to be all kinds of different ways for you to donate. And, you can do that via Zelle. You can do the GoFundMe, the Cash App. You could write a check. And there's Ricardo Guzman's address in there. That money goes to our not-for-profit. We're a 301c3, which is another thing I like to talk about, transparency, right? Everybody wants to know, what's going on and how you're doing it. Well, the CLC is the only not-for-profit that is registered where we have to report where our money's going. There is no other candidates currently, in the race or going to be in the race that has that type of transparency. You know where this stuff is going when you donate to the CLC.
Right on. So are there ways right now for people to support the CLC, even if they don't have the financial means to do so?
Absolutely. And even more important, I would say, because I understand we haven't had a pay raise in 2 years. You know, I get it. Things are tight, right? And I'm right there with you. With that said, though, we need the money to get out there around the country. But the easiest and the simplest thing to do is to go to concernedlettercarriers.com and sign up to be an endorser, a supporter, or a volunteer. We're going to need people on the ground to get this message out. Now, the tentative agreement vote was amazing, right? Record turnouts, an extra, tens of thousands of votes. But the bottom line is still only about 50% of the eligible voters voted.
Right.
We want that number to go up in 2026 when we're voting. We want 70, 80, 85%, 90% of the membership to decide who their future leadership is.
Right.
Absolutely. Because that's the ultimate endorsement. And that's how I look at politics, Alan. I don't work for a slate. I don't work for an individual. I work for the people that put me in office. That's how I get up every single day and how I operate. I tell people this all the time. I'm not here to be your friend. Doesn't mean I don't want to have a social relationship with you, but I have a job to do. And this job is harder than it's ever been, leading a union, leading the NALC. And there's very serious things that are facing us and we need all of your help, and it's long days for us. We need everybody involved. We need everybody moving in a direction. Because we just proved with that vote no movement what happens when record numbers of people get on board. You, in the end, get what you want.
That's absolutely. Yep. So how long have you been president of Branch 3?
Since May of 2018. That's when I was first elected.
Right on. And when does your current term expire?
2027, right after.
Oh, right on. So you've got a couple years ahead of you. So tell me, you're talking about the difficulties that we're facing now. What are you working on now to better your branch or to serve your members?
Man, the vision or the future.
Yeah, the big picture stuff.
Yeah, I'm all about it. Like, so for example, I've got 14 folks on my executive board. Six of them are in their early 30s. Like, the NELC has a problem recruiting younger members. I don't here in Branch 3. I can get these younger folks on board. You know, very important positions. For example, we have an OWCP rep here, which a lot of branches don't have.
Right.
We have our own arbitration advocates because we're a bigger branch. We don't have to rely on outside advocates to do our work. So right now, I've been spending the last few years training multiple folks in those positions because the folks that we currently have doing that are all retired.
Wow.
And, you know, they do that, obviously, you know, come back to help out the branch on their own time. But they're not going to be around forever. And they need to go enjoy life. And so we're training folks up that are younger. And I'm talking, they're all in their 30s.
That's fantastic.
Jobs. So if we can get them trained up, hopefully we got them for another 40 years, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's fantastic. And that you really need to embrace people who have that energy, have that drive, have that enthusiasm, and want to fight.
Same thing with our steward structure. Since I've been president, we've trained more new stewards than we've ever trained in our history.
Wow.
I mean, that's all we do here is train. We're grievance animals here in the branch. We're filing thousands of grievances a year. My executive vice president, he's famous for it. When you ask him, what do? His response is foot on the throat.
You know, that's great.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, Mike Levering is my executive vice president. He's my guy. Mike's very talented at what he does. He's very aggressive at what he does. And that's another thing too. You know, the NELC doesn't need to play defense all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with playing a good game of defense, but in order to get management at times, you know, to comply and or to back off you on the workroom floor, it certainly helps if you got an aggressive steward. It certainly helps if you got an aggressive formal A rep. It certainly helps if you got aggressive branch leaders, because management knows if they step out of line, guess who's coming?
That's it. It should always be in the back of their head that, oh man, what's the steward going to do if I do this? Yep, no question. And then those aggressive stewards can also be preventive in the sense that when management gets up at the morning stand-up talk and says some nonsense, the steward can push back on it right there on the spot.
And absolutely.
Yep, that's
real-time, you know, representation is extremely important.
Right, and these are the same aggressive stewards who aggressively defend the carrier during their day in court in the investigative interview.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay, so before I let you get out of here, I want to give you a chance to send a message to my listeners. There are a lot of people who are now becoming empowered, who are learning how branches are supposed to run, how the union's supposed to work, what management's supposed to do. And maybe they're thinking about finally stepping up into that leadership position, whether it's as a steward or a branch officer or who knows what. So what message would you send to people who want to get into that leadership position?
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Get
yes.
in the game. I'm telling you, the biggest help to me as a branch president is when I have this army of people that I can look out over and look at. Not everybody's built to be the president. Not everybody's built to be the insurance rep. Not everybody's built to be the secretary treasurer. But when you provide your leadership with a wide variety of people that have, you know, specialties and disciplines in multiple things, I love that. Because you know what? Issue comes up, I open up my toolbox and I go, this is the guy or the girl for this job. And I'll just give you an example simply with grievances, right? Because we deal with that a lot. I've got seasoned grievance handlers that are very calm. You know, they'll go in there and they'll do their thing. And then for those managers or supervisors or postmasters that don't want to play nice and they don't want to be nice, I got what I call my nuclear option. And we send him in there in those situations. And then, you know, management will say something to me and I'm like, listen, what you get is all what you put out. If you show us the good energy, I'm going to show you the good energy. If you show me the bad energy, I'm going to have a response for some bad energy. You know, so the overall point here is get involved. Even if you're not doing traditionally something the branch does, let the president and let that board know you have a specialty in something. Like you got, you know, Alan Gygax, he does podcasts, right? You know, there's other things that people can do to help educate their membership that aren't traditional things, you know, within the NALC. Mm-hmm. And again, all that does is it broadens us, gets more people involved, makes those people, number one, feel involved, mm-hmm. and number two, they're part of that union, and then they're seeing with their own eyes what the NALC is doing for them, because I believe that's a big problem right now, you know, all across the union. Is the apathy. Carriers don't have the confidence in the NALC. Carriers aren't seeing the returns that we've seen in the past. And that's a failure on our part. And I'm part of that. And that's exactly why I'm involved in this thing. I got to step up. I got to do something to change that. And thank God there's hundreds and hundreds and whatever it was, 69,000 plus people, you know, that agreed with me on that tentative agreement. That's progress, ladies and gentlemen. That's the direction we need to keep moving in.
Absolutely. David, thanks, man. That was inspirational. That's what leadership is all about. And I cannot thank you enough for A, coming on the podcast, but B, just being available to give guidance and to mentor and to help out. And you're one of the good ones, David. I really appreciate it. And hey, next year, let's go Buffalo.
You got it, brother.
All right, take care.
For a little silver quarter, we can have the Pullman porter turn the lights down low. Mm-hmm. Up we're going to shuffle up to Buffalo. Shuffle up to Buffalo.